News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig.
FM Talk 106.5, it's 7 minutes after 8 o'clock. Dan Brennan, Dalton Orwig, and Mobile Mornings. And our friend Quinn Hillier from QuinnHillier.com and the Washington Examiner joins us right now. And as if there's not enough current news to talk about, Quinn, I know the first thing you wanted to do was go back to a headline from, let's say 400 years ago.
Right. Saturday was the 400th anniversary of the Mayflower Compact, and I was surprised and disappointed it did not get more attention, because the Mayflower Compact was a big deal in the history of political thought, really. These people that came over on the Mayflower, some of them pilgrims, some of them hired hands, some of them indentured apprentices, they were shipside. They were going to have to set up a colony in the winter in Massachusetts. They'd been blown off course, and they had to figure out how they were going to do it, because they weren't all there as part of this religious pilgrimage. And they did this compact, and they said, we are going to form a civil body politic and be subservient to laws that we make. And even though they said they were still under the sovereign King James, he was far away, and they had no laws to govern them, and so they were declaring self-government in a civil body politic. We should learn again how important it is that, A, we have to trust that we do have the consent of the governed, and B, we need to make our body politic a civil one and learn how to work together again. So there's my soapbox.
Do you think that there is a reason that with each year that passes, talk of self-governance and the Mayflower, that's just buried with another page year after year? Do you think there's a reason that's not talked about as often anymore?
People have not been educated in history and civics. Every year there's a new survey that comes out that shows the appalling ignorance that people have of both history, especially American history, and civics. And so people don't understand how the system works, and therefore they don't trust the system as much. They don't understand how self-correcting it is over time, and they don't understand all these checks and balances that keep things in a rough equilibrium, and therefore they think every single election is Armageddon.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that they don't trust their own self-government. I'm not saying trust the government. I'm saying we should trust the self part of it, because this is still our government, and the system is still designed that it people might think otherwise, but it cannot, does not completely run away from us.
Yeah, well, I'm not a historical genius, but I would agree with you. I don't have a heart attack every time an election doesn't go my way. I'm just saying. That's the way I feel about it.
And, you know, on a similar note, Mike Rowe of Dirty Jobs fame, I think most people know who Mike Rowe is. He wrote a fantastic, I guess, vignette. I don't know. It was on his Facebook page. Really long. Took some time to read, but it was really beautiful, I thought. And he mentioned how, you know, in this day and age, coronavirus, and how, of course, it's affected so many lives, but and we need to do what we can to, you know, quell it. But he mentioned the Mayflower and how half of the people that came over on the Mayflower, you know, died either on the Mayflower or pretty soon thereafter. And the instances of plague and viruses that were so much worse back then because of medicinal opportunities or what have you.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, what would they think now of our aversion to risk? It's almost a complete aversion to risk, and that America was really founded by risk takers, and shutting down the economy the way that we are, or how so many people rely on the government to keep them safe, that we've gone completely the opposite way from how those new settlers, how their line of thought was as they came over. You have any thoughts on that, Quinn?
Well, yeah, I think he's absolutely right, and I've been just disgusted by college students today who have to have safe spaces And, you know, they have trigger warnings and all this crazy thing because they just can't afford, they can't abide to be exposed to things, even to ideas they feel threatened by, and, you know, much less actually taking risks. So I completely agree. Look, half, he's absolutely right, half of the pilgrims died in that first a few on the crossing and in that first winter, and yet 1 year later, almost to the day, those same survivors of that celebrated Thanksgiving.
Wow.
Which we're celebrating, obviously, this week. Mm. And they thanked God for all the blessings he had given them, and this is after half of them had died.
Mm. That is history worth remembering, knowing
exactly.
For sure. It's so basic to who we are, or at least who we should be.
Yeah, well said. Well, we are living history right now, and this election will, I guess, truly be decided in January, as the two Senate runoff seats in Georgia are decided on January 5th. And I had a story last hour about someone who did not concede their election for a very long time. I'm of course talking about Stacey Abrams, the Georgia mm-hmm. gubernatorial candidate. And she's talking about mail-in voting in Georgia, said that more than 750,000 Georgians have already requested mail-in ballots for this upcoming runoff. There's going to be early voting at the basketball arena in Atlanta and then the Mercedes-Benz Stadium. But you've written quite a bit recently about the worries with mail-in voting. Talk a little bit about what you've written here recently.
It's a disaster. Look, limited absentee voting for declared cause, specific cause, has always been around. But to go to massive, deliberate mail-in early voting is an open invitation to human error, improprieties, and outright fraud. And for one example, I urge people, call up my piece today, but look at what's happening in the 22nd Congressional District in New York. It's an absolute mess. The judge had said yesterday, we have a serious problem on our hands, because with so many ballots coming in, and I haven't even gotten into how lax their standards are, but just the sheer number of ballots coming in, you increase the number, the ability for there to be human error, mm-hmm. because they're coming in, and it's not in a controlled environment like Election Day. And so, you know, I can go on and explain some of the horrible things that have been happening, but I think they might have to redo that whole election, which right now has a margin of somewhere less than 106 votes.
Good night. Okay, I'll tell you what. Let's get look at the larger picture when we come back, Quinn. And where we are right now with Trump in the presidential election.
Okay.
Fair enough? Okay. FM Talk 106.5, Dan Brennan, Dalton Orwig. 15. You didn't think the Mayflower was going to come up today, did you?
I did not.
We surprised you with that. Well, Quinn did. 8:15 FM Talk 106.5, and back with more. Talk 106.5, Dan Brennan, Dalton Orwig, and Mobile Mornings.
Talking with Quinn Hillier on this beautiful Tuesday morning. And Quinn, Ari Fleischer, former White House press secretary, just tweeted your story from the Washington Examiner. New York congressional mess shows ills of mail-in voting. And Fleischer added, he said, add this to the list of reasons why there should be a full and fair airing of what worked and what didn't work in this election. Explain to us a little bit about what's going on in New York.
Okay, well, they've got this election where it was really tight between these two candidates 2 years ago, and now they're having a rematch, and the Republican looked like she was way ahead, 28,000 votes, but it's massive number of absent of mail-in votes came in, and with all the votes counted originally, all the votes that were accepted, she was up by only 106 votes. Mm. But then they had several thousand votes that had been disputed in one way or another and set aside. And these were ones set aside by a bipartisan elections commission, so it wasn't done on a partisan basis. And the judge decided he wanted to review them ballot by ballot. And these are all these absentee, these mail-in votes. And when you have mail-in votes, you have this extra layer. You've got to look at you've got to check the addresses and check the signature or whatever. All of this other administrative stuff, and you have spare marks. And people, when they're trying to fill it in absentee, they might not understand. So you get all sorts of anomalies. So one of the things that happened is they had these disputed ballots, and some of them the Elections Commission had said, okay, these are okay after all, and they counted them, and some they said, no, we're going to rule those out. And then they put them in a stack together with just with sticky notes as to which was which. Well, guess what? The sticky notes came off, and so you had like three sticky notes on one ballot and no sticky note on another, so the judge can't even tell which of these ballots were the ones that eventually were counted and which were not counted.
Oh, my God.
So he doesn't even know how to correct it if it's wrong. And that comes on top of such a lax system where people, in order to request absentee ballots, all they have to have is very basic information, name, date of birth. And then they can they go to a computer portal that is not secure, and they can request the ballots. And for all you know, they're requesting the ballot in somebody else's name, and then having requested it, that they can then ask that the ballot be mailed to a different address than the one on file.
Mm.
And so they've already, one county's already caught 54 people who came in to vote on election day, found out that absentee ballots had already been cast in their names. And so, of course, those absentee ballots got thrown out. But that means at least 54 times somebody tried to vote illegally in the name of people who never requested them. And that's just the people that actually showed up and caught it. So this whole thing is a mess, which shows just some examples of the problems that happen with widespread mail-in voting.
Right, and that's just in one district in New York that all this
exactly.
is happening. So,
and the only reason that it's getting so much attention, or it's about to get attention, is because this race is so close. These kinds of problems happen everywhere that they're mail-in voting, but if the races aren't close enough, then it doesn't really matter, so they don't have this ballot-by-ballot examination. But it's happening all over the country.
So do you think in this post-election analysis, and as some of these cases, you know, work their way up the court system, do you think things will change as we head into the 22 midterms, or do you think we'll see more of this mail-in and absentee and early voting?
Well, the media is all for mail-in early absentee, and they say anything that expands the ability to vote is good, even if it's, you know, the ability of dead people to vote or people to vote in other people's names. They say, oh, no, you're suppressing the vote anytime you say, well, no, you want something to be secure.
Mm-hmm.
And even if legislators, you know, do put in reasonable rules like they did in Pennsylvania, the state Supreme Court was, I think, 4-3 Democrat, and they said, well, we don't care what the law is. They literally said, we don't care what the law says, because we have a pandemic, we're going to just make up our own rules. And that's what's at issue in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
And you had similar things like that, not quite as blatant, with other state courts. And so anybody that wants to argue in favor of secure ballots somehow gets, and I don't mean the pun here, but somehow gets trumped by the media, by courts, by whatever, that just say, we don't care what the law is, and it's disgusting.
Have we lost all objectiveness in our courts? Is it completely partisan now, you believe?
It's not completely partisan, but a heck of a lot of courts are partisan. You just look at who appointed or elected, you know, what party elected these state court judges, local judges, et cetera, and you can pretty much just tell which way they're going to rule. It's actually, in some ways, much more prevalent like that there than it is on the Supreme Court, where, despite what the media will have you believe, there are all sorts of shifting coalitions on the Supreme Court, and they really don't vote in as partisan a manner as you would think.
Can you imagine the conversations Quinn had being had right now on news talk stations in Pennsylvania, the eye of the storm, and how probably irate a lot of those conservatives are?
Oh, they really are irate. Now, having said all that, let me also say you also need to be able to do arithmetic. And the problems that I'm talking about are widespread, but they're widespread, but the numbers are, modest. That's why only if an election for a House seat is really close does it make a difference. The numbers that the Trump team is trying to argue are almost impossible to prove. If you can do arithmetic, you see that the Trump team has a really, really hard thing to do, and they probably can't prove it because the fraud probably didn't happen to the extent that they needed to happen in order to overturn the apparent election result.
Mm-hmm.
So you can say that there's fraud, but don't run around saying that there are 2.7 million switched votes by some voting machine system, by some computer system, unless you can prove it. Because what that does is it makes people roll their eyes and not pay attention to the real fraud and human error of the sort that's happening in New York Congressional District 22.
Yeah, good
Thank
point.
You, Quinn. Very informative once again. Folks want to read what you're writing, follow you online, or pick up that Mad Jones Trilogy. Tell them how they can do that.
Well, Mad Jones Trilogy, satirical novels that I wrote, they're available under my name at Amazon.com. Most of what I write is at the Washington Examiner. Google Quinn Hillier and Washington Examiner, or go to my website, QuinnHillier.com. It's updated once a week, and you can have it sent to you once a week for absolute free by just putting in your email.
Let me give you a little Saints plug here, by the way, Quinn. Taysom Hill is all man.
Taysom Hill did a really good job. He's not Drew Brees. Nobody is, but he's a heck of a competitor. He did really well. Who dat say they're going to beat them Saints?
There it is.
Yeah, in a different way, he really inspires that team. It's Quinn Hillier on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks again, Quinn. We'll talk in a week.
Thanks, guys.
You got it. Dan Brennan, Dalton Orwig on FM Talk 106.5.
Yeah, and when we get back, I want to talk a little bit about Doug Jones as Joe Biden kind of rolls out his nominees for different positions in the administration. Doug Jones is a name that keeps coming up, and now odds out at sportsbooks as to whether Doug Jones will be selected as the next attorney general nominee. I'm going to talk about that when we get back.
Also, student loans, and if Biden wipes them out, what that will look like. Talk about that on the way on FM Talk 106.5.
FM Talk 106.5. You're listening to Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig. Let's head over to McConnell Automotive and talk with Louie Arata. Hey, Louie.
Good morning, guys. How are y'all?
We're doing great here at the FM Talk 106.5 studios, but I want to know what's going on at McConnell Automotive. What kind of great deals can we catch when we come by this week?
Today we're having our little Thanksgiving dinner. Mr. Keaton and I are out here cooking steak, so that's what's going on today. But we're going to be selling cars, too. Gene and Robert are manning the ship, and we got the great deals going on. We got Gump went through the showroom just a few minutes ago and said we got a bunch of trucks in last night, so that'll be great. We got $6,000 on those. Don't forget it. Tell them you're a Costco member, you get an extra $1,000. You want to check out our used car inventory, check it out online at McConnellAutomotive.com. And if you got any questions with that, give Gene or I a call at 251-476-4141. We'll take care of all your needs. Don't forget about our body shop. Don't forget about our service department. We're just rocking here on beautiful Midtown and Dolphin Street.
And trucks are really hot right now, especially going into hunting season. What's the most popular truck out there on the lot right now?
Z71 pickup truck, half ton. Also, you know, we've got a few three-quarter ton diesels. People like those, you know, getting ready to right around the corner. Heck, it'll be springtime. We'd start fishing again. People start pulling boats. So, we always got them out front. So y'all check those out, like I said, online at McConnellAutomotive.com or come by and see us.
All right. Thank you, Louie.
Thank you. Thank you.
That is Louis Arata. Go see him at McConnell Automotive on Dolphin Street, just east of I-65, and online at McConnellAutomotive.com.
It is 8:38 at FM Talk 106.5. Dan Brennan, Dalton Orwig. A beautiful day. It's sunny and breezy right now. And Dr. Bill says that's pretty much what we're going to have today. Maybe it'll warm up a little bit. Rain in between Thanksgiving and now, but to Thanksgiving itself looks really nice.
It sure does. Joe Biden has been rolling out his nominees for who he would like to serve on his administration, and he's named quite a few already. And I think today he's supposed to come out with some more, but so far he has named his nominee for Secretary of State, Antony Blinken. And the jokes on the internet yesterday were
they were everywhere
with this guy's name, Antony Blinken. Of course, you take his first letter of his first name and you A. Blinken. So lots of Abraham Lincoln jokes yesterday.
I wasn't even going there.
Homeland Security Alejandro Mayorkas. He's nominated for National Security Advisor.
A. Blinken.
Yeah, I've been stuck on that all day too.
That's excellent.
For the National Security Advisor, Jake Sullivan. Director of National Intelligence, Avril Haines. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen. Just heard that on USA Radio News. And Ambassador to the UN, Linda Thomas Greenfield. And John, this is the one that has been talked about the most, the climate czar, or that's what John Kerry has been dubbed to this point. I think they're officially going with the climate envoy, John Kerry. And, of course, he was one of the leaders in that Paris climate agreement that President Trump wanted to get out of and I think got out of. That's right. And so that'll be something new in the government, a climate czar, and it'll be interesting in a frightful way for so many what comes with that position for John Kerry. So that's who Biden has named so far. But one of the most talked about roles that he still has yet to name a nominee for is the role of Attorney General. And a name that's been mentioned a whole bunch around this state is now, I guess, soon to be former Alabama Senator Doug Jones, and how he would fit in with the Biden administration. Of course, Doug Jones has a past with Biden. I think they've known each other for a really long time. And there are actually odds out. How strange is it that nowadays they have odds on some of these sports books of who will be the Attorney General nominee? I never expected that. But
yeah, but you think about it, you can bet on anything. If you can bet, if it's legal to bet, place the bet, you know, create the wagers around nearly anything.
Yeah, if you can make a market, people are going to put some money into it. Yep. So sportsbetting.ag now has the odds for I've been on quite a few .ag sites in my day, but they've got odds for Attorney General now, and Doug Jones is actually the odds-on leader.
Is he?
To be the nominee for that role. He's at plus 150 odds, which is just, you know, right around, I think, 35% to 40% odds they're giving him of being named the nominee for Attorney General. Sally Yates is at plus 300, 3-1 odds. Deval Patrick, 4-1. Xavier Becerra, 4-1. Julian Castro, he was a presidential nominee, 5-1 odds there. Tom Perez, 5-1. Lisa Monaco, 6-1. And then Merrick Garland, an interesting name, 6-1. That was Obama's nominee for Supreme Court leading into President Trump's term as president. So Doug Jones there as the odds-on leader. And I'm kind of interested in, you know, polling listeners right now, and really a lot of people around the state of Alabama that, of course, felt strongly enough about keeping Doug Jones out of office for a second term that they voted Tommy Tuberville in as the new senator by pretty wide margins. And so
20% just about, right?
Yeah, and I know a lot of people don't like Doug Jones because of his political beliefs, but I'm wondering, you know, would it be a benefit to have, even though this is an incoming Democratic administration, to have somebody from the state of Alabama in such a prominent role there? I mean, if Biden's going to nominate someone, which he will, what are the drawbacks of having a former Alabama senator in that role?
And I'd have to think about that, but I don't think there are, as far as conservatives, are they concerned with Doug Jones, what his
political standing
right,
is.
How he would reflect that political standing while he is on the job, I guess you could say that. That'd be worth examining, because maybe we would benefit from having somebody in that high in office, as we did with Jeff Sessions. Obviously, Sessions, very different in his conservative leanings as opposed to Jones.
Yeah, and you know, the role of the attorney general is supposed to be
law
enforcement,
yeah.
role, right?
Yeah.
So you wouldn't think, and I say this sarcastically almost, but you're not supposed to have – your political standing isn't supposed to get in the way
right.
of how you rule
right.
on some of these things. But we know – in the recent past, whether it was Obama's attorney general, that you know, they do kind of rule based on their political leanings.
Mm-hmm.
But if Biden, in order to get someone into these roles, once he nominates them, they have to be able to pass through what is likely to be a Republican-held Senate. So unless the Democrats win both of those seats in Georgia, he won't be able to put the most liberal people
right.
in these positions. They
right.
have to, you know, appeal to both sides of the aisle.
And maybe Jones, when you look at it overall, he's not one of the more liberals. He was painted that way during the election, I think, because that's the way you paint your opponent,
mm-hmm.
the worst case scenario. Maybe nationally, he's probably maybe considered more of a moderate than others would be. That's just a quick assessment.
Yeah, I mean, if you put Doug Jones out in front of some of these more liberal states,
mm-hmm.
now he went more liberal than a lot of Alabama voters wanted him to.
Right.
Once he got into office,
right.
I think many expected him to try to appeal
moderate
to conservatives.
Right, but he didn't really appeal to the state all that much. At least the Democrats of the state.
Yeah, certainly not as much as expected.
Or the Republicans.
But yeah. you put Doug Jones in some of these really liberal leaning states, and he would almost be considered, you know.
Moderate.
At least a right-wing liberal
mm-hmm.
in some of these states. So
mm-hmm.
It's not as important as a position for the state as someone like Richard Shelby, who's senator and head of the Appropriations Committee. But you would have to think that having someone from Alabama in such a prominent position would not be bad for the state, right?
I wouldn't think so, but I'd have to think about that. I'd have to think about what his job entails,
mm-hmm.
quite frankly, and what he would, you know, how his politics would play in it. Meanwhile, Joe Biden's facing growing pressure to erase student loan debt. We
mm-hmm.
talked about this, like day one, take care of it. It's $1.7 trillion, by the way. A recently published report from the Committee for a Responsible Budget shows that forgiving all student loan debt would provide just a small bump to the economy, increasing cash flow by about $90 billion. The reason being, a lot of these debts, a lot of these loans that are now, you know, people are paying off, are paid off over 10, 15, as much as 30 years.
Yeah.
So to pay it all off would be a fraction, you know, the immediate bump would not be so dramatic as putting money in people's pockets. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. But I think what so many are worried about are, you know, what are the long-term implications of just writing off that debt, then so much of that debt?
Yeah.
But then you look at the numbers, and I don't have it in front of me, how much is owed for student debt. I know it's right around the trillion mark, but
1.7.
Think of that number, and then think of the money that's been spent in this pandemic already. That they've written checks. And,
I've lost track of it.
It's the amount of money that's been spent is staggering. And
we're waiting for more.
And will the money, if all these people that owe on student debts, if that's written off, will that money that they're spending on their student debts go back into the economy? And how
right.
will that play out?
Right.
That's a huge
right.
question.
It is. Okay. It's 8:46 at FM Talk 106.5. My friends at Boatler, Richardson, Wolf, I've talked about them, and I will continue to talk about them. They're good guys, and they're really good attorneys. They're at Dauphin and I-65. Here's what they do. They handle injury and other insurance claims for victims in Alabama, also in Mississippi, and in Florida, too. And the quality of their work is really reflected in their reputation around town. A lot of people know these guys, know the work they do, know their reputation. And in fact, they are the lawyers, the other lawyers, if they're like, nah, I don't necessarily handle that, but here's where you can go. And it's Boatler, Richardson, Wolf. So think about that, a law firm that other attorneys recommend. That's big. When a legal issue related to an injury, workers' compensation, or other insurance claims happens, you can count on Boatler, Richardson, Wolf to respond quickly. Sound advice. As always, this is key, there's never a fee charge for a consultation at Boatler, Richardson, Wolf. Visit them on the web at brwlawyers.com. Also, call or text anytime, Boatler, Richardson, Wolf at 251-433-7766. That's 251-433-7766. Yeah, man. News of the Fools at 8:53 on FM Talk 106.5. If you haven't seen this story, you're going to like this story.
I don't think I've seen it.
So in France, you've got to. They're kind of in a lockdown. You've got to apply to get out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You have to apply.
You have to apply so you can do whatever you have to do on the streets and go, because they're in a lockdown. And you have to appreciate a criminal who respects paperwork. On Friday, a guy named Daniel filed out official government form looking for an exemption so he could go somewhere. And he wanted to, on the application, he said, I want to leave my apartment so, quote, I can smash a guy's face in. Because he put the full details of his plan on the form, police found him right where they thought he would be. Mm. He was waiting outside the guy's house to smash his face in.
Just in time.
Yeah, just in time. Police say they appreciated Daniel filling out the paperwork so perfectly, where they were like, okay, that guy, he's going to go smash a guy's face in. Here's the address. And they were able to stop him before the crime ever happened.
Wow.
Again, a criminal who respects paperwork, you can't beat that.
It's tough being a criminal with a conscience.
That's, I guess, what it was right there. 854 at FM Talk 106.5. Dan Brennan, Dalton Orwig.
It's always a guy named Dan, isn't it?
Yeah.
Doing stuff like
Lots of times it is.
Hey, I want to thank Patty from Allegri Farms. She just brought, first off, fresh satsumas.
She's a wonderful lady.
And a travel bag for our very own Dan Brennan, so that when he heads up to Virginia Beach
in 7 minutes,
you won't have to stop along the way.
Plenty
of great snacks in there.
That's unreal.
That's outstanding. Thank you so much, Patty.
Thank you, Patty.
From Allegri Farms. So that was your chain of fools story.
Yes.
I have a story that's been making its rounds here over the last couple of days.
Okay.
And I've got to tell you, I really want to go back and watch the Sopranos series on HBO after this story. A wise guy nicknamed Tony Meatballs. Tony Meatballs, among more than a dirty dozen alleged South Philly mobsters that was charged in a sweeping federal indictment yesterday. It was unsealed yesterday.
Telling you, I didn't do it.
Yeah, Tony Meatballs. suspects are accused of everything from illegal sports betting to heroin peddling to offering loans at 400% interest. Well, yeah, that sounds like a mobster.
That's reasonable.
Yeah, he said, not to mention plotting to kidnap and possibly murder a drug dealer to save their reputations after this drug dealer sold them fake narcotics. So, Anthony Tony Meatballs Gifoli, 72 years old. He almost made it through his lifetime.
Without going to jail.
I'm sure he's been behind bars once or twice.
Yeah, we have to assume his resume includes jail.
Yeah, at some point he earned that nickname, Tony Meatballs. I don't know. I'm interested in how he got that name.
It was at dinner.
I doubt that he's a slim 150 or 60 pounds.
Well,
but he was named.
You shouldn't assume things like that.
He was named in the grand jury indictment, along with others, including accused La Cosa Nostra underboss Stevie Mazzone and alleged capo Dominic Mr. Hopkins Grande. underlings that were targeted by the indictment include Louis Sheep Beretta. Last name Beretta.
They've all got the nickname.
Listen to this one. Joey Electric Servidio and Daniel Harry Castilli. His nickname is only Harry. You could probably imagine what he looks like. The crime syndicate, they said, has been working from Philadelphia to Atlantic City, New Jersey.
Yeah, right.
They laid out the mafia hierarchy in court documents, as well as offered definitions for related key terms. They said that unlike New York City, where several crime families have ruled over the years, Philly and its surrounding area have been continuously under siege from the same single mafia family since 1931.
Good.
I'm sure they've done some awful things in order to hold on to that title. The court documents only identified the family's current street boss by the initials ML, and Philly crime family's consigliere was, quote, typically an older, experienced mobster who counsels the boss on important issues. Anyway, I thought this was interesting, and it's about time. I've watched the Sopranos series twice through already.
You have?
And I was too young to watch it as it initially aired. I remember my dad sending me off to bed on Sunday night so he could watch the latest Sopranos.
Mm-hmm.
I have watched it twice through, so it's about time for me to go three times.
It is so good, and it's amazingly accurate for how colorful the names are and how colorful the people are, but they actually, that tells you right there. I mean, listen to the nicknames. You could make it up, but you don't have to make it up because it's already out there.
Tony Meatballs. It's outstanding, the name.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, get to this really quickly. I tweeted about this last night at Dalton Orwig on Twitter, but have you seen this? Ghislaine Maxwell, the Jeffrey Epstein enabler. She's been in all kinds of documentaries, and she's been held in jail. And now they're saying Ghislaine Maxwell apparently had a COVID-19 scare and is being held in quarantine. And basically tweeted, okay, let's see what happens from here, because we kind of know what happened with Epstein, but not really.
Oh, yeah.
He killed himself behind bars. But
a lot of people
questioning that and wondering about the safety of Ghislaine Maxwell before all of this comes out in court.
And is she going to survive it until court?
Big question.
Good question. All right, Dalton. Y'all got it from here. See you next week.
All right. Have a good trip.
FM Talk 106.5.